Good night, everyone. Welcome to In, a series of live online conversations with practitioners in the visual arts. In is broadcasted by New Local Space, a micro gallery and contemporary art initiative in Kingston, Jamaica, and a subsidiary of Audrey Production House Creative Sounds. Our host, Nicole Smythe Johnson, will be talking with Mario Robles, the Knight Curator of School Programs at Perez Art Museum, Miami, about her curatorial practices and educational programs at PAM, as well as her upcoming visit to Jamaica with Diana Nawi. We'll be accepting questions throughout the segment, so please send them in as soon as you can via Twitter or Facebook at NLS Kingston or via email to nlskingston@gmail.com. Welcome, Mari. Nicole, take it away.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Mari.
Thank you.
I'm just going to tell
Good evening.
Our audience a little bit about you before we get started. Mari Robles is the Knight Curator of School Programs at the Perez Art Museum, Miami. She oversees the Knight Schools Program, an endowed initiative that serves 27,000 Miami-Dade County public school third grade students at the museum and encourages critical thinking skills aligned with student achievement goals. Robles completed her master's at Rhode Island School of Design in Art and Design Education. Her graduate work focused on the history of art making in museums. Next. So I'm going to just jump right in at the deep end with the hard questions. Mari, could you please tell us what is a curator and how did you become one?
Okay, that's a good place to start because a lot of people would actually say that I would not consider me a curator. But when you think about the role of a curator and how they produce content and they produce experience. The work that I do in education is aligned with that definition. So thinking about audiences. Ooh, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Do you hear that?
Is that better?
Let me see. Let me close. Okay. I think that's a little bit better. Okay, so when I think about the work that I do with schools and different audiences, it's in line with that definition of a curator, someone who produces experiences, who's thinking about sort of the museum and how people use the museum and how they come together with content. So when I say that, some people might not consider me a curator. I would say the vast majority, actually, of the field probably wouldn't. They wouldn't consider me a curator. They would, but it was one of the things that stood out for me about the museum, the Perez Art Museum, Miami, is that all of the education team, our managers are curators, and so I think it speaks to sort of the progressive way that they're thinking about education programs.
Okay, and how did you become a curator?
How did I become a curator? I have just been working in museums for over 8 years. I have been working with different audiences and thinking about them and how to present our content to that audience. So that's sort of where my background lies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this question will touch a little bit on what you've already said, but so you did your master's in art and design education.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about how curating is perceived and how your practice fits or doesn't fit into that. So if you could tell us a little bit more about that, how do you think that the work of an education curator differs from other forms of curatorial practice? But also, how you think it's similar. And why did you choose to focus there in particular? Because it seems like you decided that that was where you wanted to work, since that's what you focused on in your master's.
Yeah. I have been, I guess I'll start with the first part of that question just to clarify a little bit about the definition of a curator. you know, traditionally a curator at a museum organizes, researches, and develops exhibitions. And so when you just take it, take that definition, then educational practices fall out outside of that. But really what you're thinking, what we're thinking about at MAM is really where those lines are, at PAM, I'm sorry, is really where those lines get blurred, and how we can set up a complete experience for these audiences. And I was interested, I've been interested in museums for a very long time. It started really, really early for me in high school. I would often visit museums on my own. I was introduced at an early age. My parents took me to museums. So I was really drawn to the space of the museum, the sort of freedom that I felt to have conversations in the museum that that I couldn't necessarily have outside of that space. I felt like it was a bit of a catalyst for me. So that's why I was interested in studying museum education, which is, I studied art and design education, but it was with a focus on museum education at RISD.
Okay. And can you tell me a little bit about PAM, the history and the mission, and what's the curatorial focus of PAM as a museum, as a broader organization?
Sure. So it's a fairly young institution. It opened its doors in the early 80s, and it was actually known by, it's undergone two name changes. So in the 80s, when it opened, it was the Center for Fine Arts, and it was strictly an exhibiting organization. So it did not have a collection, and it brought in some big blockbusters to Miami-Dade. In 1996, the mission shifted, and the name actually changed as well, so it became the Miami Art Museum, and it became a collecting institution, so it was interested in collecting art of the 20th and 21st century. And then just at the end of last year, we went through another name change. And so now we are known as the Perez Art Museum Miami, and we rebranded and we changed homes. So we opened a new building in downtown.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's really great.
I had a chance to visit in December, and I was really blown away. I mean, there's definitely really good art to see there, but the building itself is an experience.
Absolutely, yeah. That was part of the architect's vision, and you know, our leadership. We were interested in having a place that exhibited, you know, 20 contemporary and modern art, but then also allowed for social spaces and spaces that you could see the city. And so I'm glad you had a chance to see that, because it really is a beautiful place to experience Miami.
Yeah, and it seems like that definitely locks into what you're talking about with their approach to education, trying to kind of expand that experience for audiences.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's, you know, museums are informal places for learning. So what are the kind of conversations you can have at a museum, and how can that be more or less relevant in the lives of Miami-Dade residents?
Yeah, museums as informal places for learning. I like that. I think a lot of people would be a little bit surprised to hear it articulated in that way. But yeah, I think that's a really exciting idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so I understand that in April, PAM will be showing a version of the Caribbean Crossroads exhibition that was in New York last year, the year before last, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously that's really interesting for our space, since, you know, this is the Caribbean. We had a lot of work in that show. And I'm curious about how this exhibition is going to differ from the earlier New York-based exhibition, or not so much. Looking at the space of PAM, it seems like it would really have to. So what kind of thinking is there behind that?
Yeah, so we were very excited to be the first venue to, as a traveling institution, you know, have this exhibition travel to our institution. Mm-hmm. It is drawing from the similar themes that were presented in New York. So, but in New York, it was presented at three different locations.
Yeah.
The museum, El Barrio, and the Studio Museum. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we're going to be receiving about 180 works less. I think in New York, it was about 400 works at those three institutions. Yeah. So we'll receive less works, but they'll all be exhibited in the same, you know, in the same venue. So I think that will produce some really exciting conversations and points. Two of the four themes that we're going to be exploring were at the Queens Museum, and the other two were at El Museo. So we'll be looking at immigration and other themes in the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that seems like it will be particularly relevant for Miami. With the large immigrant population.
Absolutely. So it's, you know, it's going to present a survey of Caribbean art, but in Miami we have a lot of collectors and historians who are expert in this area. So mm-hmm. we're going to be sort of exploring these themes for both audiences, for the novice and for experts.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. And why are you and Diana coming to visit Jamaica? Is it related to the Caribbean Crossroads work? And are there other parts of the Caribbean that you're visiting?
You know, so in part it will be to do research and development for the show that's opening in April. But as an institution, we're interested in making more connections and getting to know the art community of the Caribbean in a deeper way. Mm-hmm. So that's really our goal coming to Kingston next week. And in terms of other trips that are coming up in the near future, you know, our staff is trying to divide and conquer. So while Diana and I are going to be in Jamaica, we have our chief curator, Tobias Ostrander.
In Barbados, right? I think I saw something like that.
Yeah, he'll be in Barbados at that time. Our director of education, Emily Mello, is looking to go to Trinidad soon. So I think we have ties in Puerto Rico. So we're really thinking about a long-term relationship and how we can build that. And so that's part of the reason why we're going.
Yeah, well, I look forward to that. Definitely. And then, for, you know, I think the main part of your work, can you tell me about the night schools program? You know, it sounds really impressive, 27,000 third graders being reached through that program. If you could tell me a little about how you developed the project and, you know, what kinds of programming and activities do you do with these students?
Yeah, it's a good day to talk about the night schools program because we just actually hit a milestone in our program, which is today we served our 5,000th student.
Nice! Congratulations!
Thank you. So I'm the inaugural night curator of school programs, and I have been with the institution for about a year and a half, but really the program started back in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was the former director and the superintendent of schools of Miami-Dade County Public Schools who came together and were thinking about how the museum and the city could partner, and they conceived the Knight Schools program, and then the Knight Foundation really stepped up with an endowment that $10 million endowment to cover the cost of the program. So the idea was proposed that we would focus on third grade, and part of that is because there's a lot of research that supports the idea of early experiences with with art as being pivotal in creating lifelong museum goers, and so that's sorry.
No, I'm just following. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's really where we're coming from in terms of the history, and then for the last year and a half, it has been building this program and trying to understand the context of Miami and really trying to get a hold of, you know, what our new space would be like and how we could serve 27,000 third grade students annually. So that will repeat every year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a goal that will repeat, and then on top of that, we have, it's not just the students, but we're also offering programs for teachers, for educators in Miami-Dade County. So that's been a wonderful challenge and very exciting, and so the 5,000 mark is really meaningful at this point, just to know that we're continuing to make that happen. We have students in the galleries. Every day we have tour slots, and we have a group of teaching artists who basically tour students around our collection galleries, and they lead discussions, they make projects with students, they...
In the gallery space, they make the projects?
Yes, they do. So that's actually an important component to how we engage and how we talk about the work that we're... It's not just discussion, it is actually sort of art making to bring out an aspect of the work, which correlates with what I was interested in my thesis project, thinking about art making in the museum, actually.
Oh, okay. And then there's a question from the audience that's pretty relevant to what we're talking about now.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead. It's, have you developed art programs for kids in the 3 to 6 age group? If yes, can you give a quick overview of the key aspects of the program?
Sure. We offer programs for that age group that include story. It's called Story Time, and we focus on a single story that brings out an aspect of art education. So maybe color theory. Thinking about multiple perspectives, but at at the third grade, 3-year-old, 4-year-old level. So for the night schools program, it's a K-12 program. So we don't do that. The youngest age sets, we don't do the pre-K.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But actually, I say that, and then next week we're working with a Montessori group, and so their group is 3, 4, 5-year-olds in a mixed class. And so what we're doing is giving an hour-long tour and mixing in creating shorter tour stops and mixing in some art making and some storytelling within the context of the tour.
Yeah, and I'm curious, is there a separate education space, or does all of this happen in the general gallery areas?
There is
seen that where there's been, you know, an education space that's tables and chairs, and it's kind of like a little workshop.
Yeah.
So is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, the museum actually has a wonderful education center. It's called the Knight Education Center. It's on the third floor, and it has a beautiful deck. So it's actually one of the beautiful views that you can see when you visit. We have studio spaces. We have a library and a seminar room. So we do have classroom space that we could do, the kind of art making that you can get really messy and that you can do for a long period of time. A lot of our current programs right now, we're still developing our studio programs in the education department, so that's in the works. But a lot of the engagement with schools and with teachers, actually, they happen in the galleries. And we find that that's a really effective way of talking about teaching and learning and doing it right in front of the art object, because
mm-hmm.
really bring out like what the artist was thinking, the ideas that the artist was trying to play with.
Yeah, and this space, as I said, when I had the chance to visit, one of the things that I remember is, for example, there's the theater is this huge stairwell in the middle of the museum.
Yeah, our grand staircase.
Yeah, I really like that because it's kind of integrated into everything else. It's not off in a room. It's kind of in this center area. So
yeah, you know, I mean, it just seems part of what we're, especially since we're reaching every third grade student, part of a large part of the experience that we offer is just coming to the museum and the idea of leaving your classroom and spending the day in this beautiful space. And so it feels right to stay within the context of the galleries and kind of explore that. And even just walking up those stairs, like you say, is such a wonderful experience for a student to have, that to go straight up to the classroom just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, no. And can you tell me some more about the teaching artists? Because that's pretty interesting as well.
Yes, so across the board, most of our education programs are led by teaching artists. So for the night school programs, we have 9 teaching artists that have their own studio practice or creative practice, but are interested in education, and so they lead students through the museum with the eye of an artist and sharing their experiences as an artist while they go, while they lead the visit. And we find that students really respond to that take on their day, you know, they're fascinated by, we have some of our teaching artists actually do some drawings with the students while they're, you know, while they're in the museum, and teachers and students just really respond to that.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, well, moving a little bit from this particular project, but generally in your curatorial career, can you tell me what were your top 3 projects? You know, what were the things that you enjoyed the most that you did as part of your work as a curator? And of course, you can talk about that in the broadest sense, right? Because I think by this point in the conversation, we've agreed that curating is a pretty varied and wide field. So
yeah. I mean, you know, number one, I would say, is the night schools program, the program
we're working on. Yeah, no, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's really inspiring and exciting to work on a program that, you know, when I think about it, some days I'm just I get excited at the idea that we're sort of changing the landscapes of sort of art knowledge, perhaps, on such a large scale, and we won't know exactly, you know, for some time, but the idea that potentially we're helping kids get more comfortable in museum spaces and in gallery spaces, and so maybe that, you know, will lead eventually to them being a little more interested, more engaged with the arts, is really exciting to me. That's the stuff that, like, you know, fuels my passion. So definitely the program that I'm working on currently, and all the questions that it poses, is top there. I had mentioned a little bit about my thesis project at the Rhode Island School of Design, and I would say that's another one that comes to mind, where I was looking at the history of art making in museums.
Yeah, if you can tell us a little bit about that, I'm curious.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that came about as prior to going for my master's degree. I worked at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw, we had a group of teaching artists there as well that led our programs. And I saw how a lot of the way that they engaged with art making in the galleries in particular, and sort of dealing with the limitations of the materials that you can use in the galleries and all, and the time constraints, was really effective. So I wanted to learn more about that. And so when it was time, when I was thinking about topics and research questions, that was, I wanted to sort of get a sense of like the history of that, how, when did that start happening? And so I looked at three institutions. They're large and large institutions, in the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Art Institute of Chicago, and the MFA in Boston. And I looked at starting from the early 20th century. I just started looking to see what the education programs look like, and so just to get a sense of that history and the idea of creating, you know, for museum education in particular. Documenting our history was something that I was, that again is a passion of mine. So that would be project number two. And those are really the two that stick out.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I mean, those are pretty cool. All right. Another sort of related question, I think. Who are your mentors? Because it sounds like you have this really specific interest. So were there people who you were looking at who really got this going for you?
Yeah, particularly at the Museum of Contemporary Art. You know, I've always been interested in museums, but I worked with Jacqueline Terraza, who was my boss at that time, and she is currently at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And she has been an extremely important mentor to me in terms, you know, professionally and personally. I think at that time, you know, trying to narrow down what your passions are when you're in that moment of trying to figure out sort of where you would like your career to go. She was important in sort of informative to my career. And then on top of that, just developing a mentality of sort of keeping that fire in your belly and keeping that drive alive and really going for projects and owning it 100%. And so she was really pivotal, helping me to continue on into my master's program, and then I continue to rely on, you know, whenever I need a little help in transition, I reach out to her, and she's an important one. Another really important professional mentor I met during my time at RISD at the Rhode Island School of Design, and that was Ray Williams. So he used to be the director of education at the Fogg Museum of Art, and he's currently in Austin at the Blanton Museum. And he's really interested in sort of how people learn and the museum and in more social ways, the social learning that occurs. And so I feel like he deals with vulnerability, and he deals vulnerability in the museum, which was such a different take on, you know, thinking about the museum as a place where you learn about art history and about the objects, and really making it a place where you learn about people. And so that has been a really, he's been super important.
Cool. I'll have to look him up. That sounds like something I'd like to read. And what advice do you have for young curators trying to break into the field?
I mean,
we always ask this question because,
really?
You know, there's people listening who are like, maybe Mari will be my mentor, you know, so I do feel a responsibility to ask the curators that come on about this.
Absolutely. Let's see, so... I think just making in time for reflection and sort of narrowing down what drives you is a really important thing to do, to identify. So as that, as your career takes twists and turns, you can always go to that sort of driving force from within. And that will help you make decisions about where you should be and what kind of projects you should take on. And then also reaching out for help. So I think that's also a very important thing when we in the arts. There's so many ways to get from point A to point B that it's important to have a network of individuals that you trust so that you can reach out for help when you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that advice. I need to practice a little more myself. Okay, and then my final question, even though we have quite a few questions from the audience here to get to, but my final question is this. So a few weeks ago, a Miami-based artist named Maximo Caminero, I'm sure you're familiar with this incident, but broke a vase that was part of an installation of Ai Weiwei's work at PAM. I read in a number of reports that Mr. Caminero claimed he was protesting against what he called PAM's lack of support of local artists. How does the museum respond to that critique?
You know, the museum respects freedom of speech, but this particular act was an act of vandalism, and it was an act of vandalism towards another artist. So that's really where, you know, the critique ends in terms of what Mr. Caminero was attempting. And also, it's a false critique because when you look at our galleries currently, you'll see that there are Miami-based artists throughout our museum. And you know, tomorrow we have the show opening by a Miami-based artist, Edward Duval Carrier. We have Miami-based artists programmed into next year. Diana now is working on a show that will open in October. So. By Adler Guerrier, and so really, this was a simple act of vandalism.
Baseless. I mean, no, and it sounds like if you're also having teaching artists who presumably are based in Miami as well.
Right? It's true. Yes.
There's a lot of different kinds of support. It sounds like.
Exactly.
So for our audience questions. Some hard-hitting ones here. So resources are limited, as are budgets/pockets in Jamaica. Do you have any creative approaches to exposing children to art/art appreciation? And maybe there might be a little bit of additional context to add to this, because certainly when I was listening to you, having gone to a lot of museums as a child and this kind of thing, we don't have as many art spaces in Jamaica. So that's also... So resources are limited in that way, in terms of spaces, as well as you know, the funds that individual spaces might have or artists. So yeah, so what creative approaches would you suggest for our audience?
You know, as I truly believe that you don't need, and resources help, obviously, and time and sort of planning and developing is the key to I think reaching a broad audience effectively. So when I think about sort of the experiences at PAM that we have created and the art making that goes on in the museum, it financially the materials that we use do not cost that much. I mean. So I think it depends on, you know, if you have willing bodies, that's the that's the most expensive aspect. But in terms of setting up encounters with drawing, with collaging, all of these things can be done you know, very low cost using all kinds of, you know, using reusable materials. So just, I think it's mainly about getting the word out that you're a space that's open to these, you know, to a broad audience, and that, and making sure that you always are welcoming on that front.
Yeah, no, and I think in general what you've been saying too sort of shifts my thinking anyway. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're thinking exposing children to art and art appreciation, and you're thinking maybe you need to carry them to museums and so on. But it sounds like a lot of what you're focused on, even in the very beautiful facilities that you have at PAM, is actually having children make art. That's the way to learn about art, by doing it. So it sounds like that's a little bit of what you're saying as well. If you have the resources to make art, which lucky for us,
yeah,
you know, art is can be quite cheap to make, yeah, then that's the way to learn about it and appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes it just takes that invitation from somebody else who is involved in the arts to really just put it forth in order to bring in new people, you know, because sometimes the arts are perceived that there's like a barrier, and so you just want to minimize those barriers in terms of the opportunity to be creative with materials or the opportunity to see something beautiful in a gallery. So that's really where I would say the focus should be. Yeah.
And the other question that we have from the audience is, and I think it touches a little bit on things you said, there is a very uneven relationship in terms of infrastructure and access to resources between institutions in the Caribbean and institutions in the USA. How does PAM intend on dealing with that as you develop closer ties to the galleries and the like in the Caribbean?
I'm not sure I can. I think for the moment we're still just we're still sort of getting a sense of how you know, the arts community and who's involved in the arts community. So I'm not sure that we're quite ready to say how we would. You know, I'm looking forward to being in Kingston and sort of getting a better sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's sort of in the research phases right now to figure out what possibilities there are at all. Yeah,
absolutely, because, you know, context is so important, and without sort of understanding the intricacies of the context, it's difficult for me to say exactly how, you know, how we might
mitigate what they don't
work.
Okay. Anyway, I have another question. Mm-hmm. How does PAM see its place within Miami, especially Miami's place as a hub of the Caribbean and Latin America, and balance its communities art-wise? And I think this is a little bit connected to the earlier question about curatorial focus. So, you know, how is that? How is Miami's place as a hub of the Caribbean and Latin America being?
Yeah.
Reflected in them.
So the you know, PAM is interested in being locally relevant, but part of a national conversation. We focus on exhibiting art from the Americas, but we are particularly interested in the Caribbean and Latin America as being sort of also tied into us being locally relevant. You know, Miami is a very diverse city. It has a lot of, it's represented by many communities. And so I think that's part of where PAM is taking its place currently, both in its curatorial practices and now we're pushing towards our educational practices as being tied closely with the Caribbean and Latin America.
Okay. And how do you, as an education curator, complement the work of other more traditional definitions of curator at the museum? So, for example, how do you and Diana's work complement each other? And this is another one from the audience.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with conversations early on. So when we're thinking about exhibitions, we think hand in hand about programming that would go along with exhibitions, and our education team and the curatorial team are together, you know, brainstorming and thinking of those ideas together, and so that kind of creates a more cohesive programming all around, both for the galleries and then how to interpret and program those galleries. And that doesn't happen at every institution, you know, so that's, I do feel that that is something that PAM is really cultivating to bring.
Having those two working together from the very beginning.
Yes, on equal footing and you know, in close proximity. I mean, our desk space is right next to curatorial as well, so that, you know, we're always hearing conversations, we try to stay on top of each other in terms of what the early ideas for the next thing is going to be, so that we can provide input.
Okay.
And that's really, just to sort of continue on that front, our chief curator, Tobias Ostrander, is also, I have to say that he has been leading that effort as well. He has a background as an educator, and so I think he's also sympathetic to sort of making sure that we're always in communication.
It's a
rare thing to find, I think.
So I was like, no, I know that some of those conversations were also happening at the National Gallery when I was there.
Really?
Trying to merge. And I think it was done fairly well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely, I think, the way to go right now with institutions that, like you say, are trying to reach a broad audience.
Yeah.
You really have to develop them at the same time. That becomes a real imperative.
That's
great. Are there particular things you are looking to get out of your trip to Kingston? What are they? The audience is super curious about you. It's like, what?
I like to know.
Tell us more. Tell us more.
I'm interested in like I said, making connections and getting to know artists. We're going to be meeting with the team at a National Gallery, so getting to know the space. We're going to be giving our public talk on Saturday evening.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully just getting to know the arts community in a very broad sense. So that, come back to Miami.
Okay, and
sorry?
Go ahead, sorry.
So that when we come back to Miami, we can really start thinking about how those relationships and connections can continue them into the future.
Yeah, as you said, just getting that initial footing to see what the landscape is like.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll be coming in on the Friday evening and staying until Tuesday afternoon.
Okay. And that's Friday the
21st.
Right, Friday the 21st.
March 21st.
Okay, and your talk will be at NLS, right?
That's correct. At 7? Is it?
Yes, so we look forward to having you and Diana tell us more in that space. And somebody asked, I think you've already answered a lot of this, but if there's anything you want to add, what do you have planned for your time in Jamaica? So yeah, meeting with the National Gallery.
We're going to the National Gallery. I think we're gonna get. I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to see the collection of Barrington Watson. We are meeting with some professors at Edna Manley. And we are doing a couple of studio visits, and then hopefully also eating some good food, because that is...
of course. That's what I didn't. That will definitely happen.
Okay.
And so this will be your first time in Jamaica, in the Caribbean?
This will be my first time in Jamaica, yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we look forward to having you. I'm going to just check and see if there are any more questions. I think that's it.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you very much, Mari. It was really great talking to you. Like I said, I really look forward to being able to meet you in person and to eat some really good food together and all these great things. Let's see if Deborah has anything that she wants to add. Deborah?
Thank you, Mari. I just want to tell you that we're really grateful that you took the time to talk to us about your visit and all the work you've done. And we really look forward to meeting you. And we'll post everything about your talk and Diana's talk at NLS. So, to everybody tuned in, look out for that information. And it was just a pleasure having you. And Nicole, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm looking forward to meeting you both on the 21st.
Yeah. And for everyone tuned in, please spread the word that this episode is archived on the NLS YouTube channel and also on our website. So your friends and you can access it at any time. All right. Good night.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.